Welcome to a podcast of The Mike Novak Show. You can listen to Mike live Sunday mornings from 9 to 11 Central on Chicago's Progressive Talk, AM and FM.
Experiments are amazing. The unknown has no border.
Use the scientific method. Plan and follow steps in order.
It's the scientific method.
You start with a hypothesis.
Well, what's that, you say?
It's just an educated guess. It goes this way.
Any question that is puzzling you.
Can a plant grow without light?
Can a monkey tie a shoe?
Do dogs have good eyesight?
It's the scientific method.
Now set up your experiment.
Cool, can I make slime?
Only if it's scientific and if it's worth the time. Everything in your experiment must be the same,
except for the variable. Yeah, that's its name.
Live from the beautiful Showcase Studios on North Milwaukee Avenue in Chicago, in between Angie's Deli and Lido Banquets, and just a pierogi's throw away from the Polish capital of the Western Hemisphere. It's The Mike Novak Show, Chicago's only locally broadcast deep green gardening and environment program. Heard every Sunday right here on Chicago's Progressive Talk, AM and FM.
Good planets are hard to find. Temperate zones and tropic climes. True currents and thriving seas. Wind blowing through breathing trees. Strong ozone and safe sunshine. Well, good planets are hard to find. Good planets are in demand.
This hour of the Mike Novak Show is brought to you by The Care of Trees, a Davey company. Their business is people and their love for trees. And by Recycled Granite, featuring eco-friendly split stone veneers and handmade products by individuals with disabilities. Go to recycledgranite.com. And by Birchold's Floral Gift and Garden Center. Get green, let's get growing. He's so green, he takes his life in his hands every time he walks across an intersection. Here he is, Mike Novak.
One more time.
And good morning on what will soon... We're going to start this Sunday in summer and finish this Sunday in autumn. How cool is that, huh? And it is cool out there. Weather's nice. It's turning into autumn, although from what I hear, we'll get some more warm weather coming up reasonably soon. And you know, things are not done growing. This is a great time of year to get lots of work done in the garden. It's still time to get your lawn in shape for the spring. This is still it. I mean, we're smack dab in the middle of that. If you're a lawn person, if you're a tree person, you should be listening to the show today, because in the second hour, Mucho Trees. We're going to have Dr. Andrew Bell in the studio from the Chicago Botanic Garden. The Botanic Garden has done or put together an adaptive tree planting list to help guide municipalities, public land stewards, and private owners like you, if you're a private property owner, in tree selections. The idea is this is with an eye towards 2050. 2070, 2100. That seems like a long time away, doesn't it? But trees, because of climate change, won't be growing in the same places. And it's really not that far away. And some trees that grow well in Chicago now will not grow well in Chicago in 2050. And this is the study they did. So Dr. Andrew Bell will be in the studio to talk. Hold on, getting my bell here and hoping that it didn't. You fixed it last week, Lisa, so there we go. How about that?
I did. Hopefully it still.
Yeah. I put it off to the side. The problem is
it gets tossed in the
box. It gets tossed into that box, and then there's.
Just periodically tighten that little nut on the top. That's all you need to do.
Is that what it is?
Yeah, just tighten that every time you touch it.
Oh, okay.
It's cool. Just wiggling free.
Wow, okay. That's our engineer, our resident engineer, Lisa Albrecht. And the reason I was getting the bell out, because also in the second hour, Pat Etherington from The Care of Trees, great sponsor on the Mike Novak Show, will be here to talk about tree planting. See, now we put the two together. You figure out which tree you want to plant so it will still be alive in the year 2525. No, actually, 2050. I should have found that song as bump music for today.
What song is that?
In the year 2525. One of the dumbest songs ever written.
I don't think I've heard it. Sarah's smiling. Sure, you know it,
Sarah? Do you know it, Sarah?
Uh-huh.
You've not heard this, Lisa? Come on. This was a big hit in the 70s, early 70s.
I would have been 5 or 6.
Oh, well. Just a gleam in your mother's eye.
Well, how do I know it then?
Well,
yeah, that's
know.
Right. That's what I want to know. How does?
Because you know everything, Sarah.
Hardly.
Carol Brewer.
Hi, Carol.
Hi, guys. How's it going?
All right.
I do know that song.
Okay. See,
yeah,
there
I'm
we go.
To it.
Carol sounds like she's in a tin can.
Yeah. Now turn that mic. Point.
Sorry about that.
There you go. That's much better. Of course, if you want to be in a tin can, that's okay. Just, we'll give you the can opener.
All right. Are there benefits to being in a tin can?
No, none.
Okay.
None on a hot day.
No bennies at all here. Well, in here, it's air conditioned. So it doesn't matter whether she's in the tin can. So there we go. There's the Musketeer roll call right now.
I'm so missing Rob.
Musketeer's roll call. Count off now.
I miss Rob.
Yeah, Rob's not here. But he's going to be back.
Rob
soon.
Is a Colorado flood survivor.
Yeah,
He was there. He was there though.
So we're going to hear stories about 1,000-year floods in Colorado from Rob.
First-hand account.
When he gets back here,
scary stuff. You know that flood is some scary stuff. And I is it okay if I talk for a second? And did you see the all the fracking wells are underwater. The
methane is bubbling up.
There's
through
lots of fun stuff happening that, you know, of course, will never happen.
Some guy. I made a trip downstate, out of the city, Friday, and coming back listening to Tom Hartman on this very station, and some guy called in. One of those guys that, he works in the industry, and his whole premise of his call was, you don't know what you're talking about. This stuff could never leak.
Hey, when it's tilted over 45 degrees, some of those storage tanks.
Yeah.
Or if the whole well is underwater and you can't reach
it. And the guy was
equipment.
Just, and he kept saying, you know, inferring that Tom did not know what he was talking about when he said this stuff could possibly leak.
Tom did not know. Okay, sure.
Yeah, well, you know, and Tom knows a lot. He knows way too much, all right, for any one human being. That disturbs me a little bit. But there was this guy with this attitude that this is perfectly safe and we're fine and nothing. Even in a 1,000-year flood, don't worry, the fracking is cool and we're fine, except that we're hearing reports of methane bubbling up.
Well, and I don't know, you know, what the storage requirements are in Colorado, but in a lot of states there are no storage requirements. And so these are open ponds. So what would happen there? Oh, hello, it just goes out in the water where everybody's swimming trying to get to safety.
Wow. That'd be fun. Let's swim through that water.
Well, and I was curious,
you know, when
they
were showing
folks in hazmat suits, and they were talking about some of the pathogens and some of the bacteria and things like that that was in the water because it was all open sewage. But I also wondered, I wonder if they have any concerns about some of the fracking chemicals that they're swimming in as well as they rescue people.
Of course. See, we didn't worry about that when I was a kid. When I was a kid and the street flooded.
And you ran out.
You ran out in the street and you waited around, and then your parents would call you in because they were afraid you were going to get polio. That's the way it worked when I was a kid. It's like, no, you got to get out of there because you're going to get polio. Now, I never understood how that was supposed to happen, us running around the streets.
Is it communicable that way?
You know what?
I don't know anything about polio. It's been eradicated before.
It's been eradicated.
Yeah.
And it was, but it was at that time, as it was being eradicated, that we were told don't run in the streets because in the water because you'll get polio. I don't know. All I knew is that if you ran around in muddy water, you were going to get polio. Now you get to run around in muddy water and have fracking chemicals swishing, swirling around your ankles.
Crazy stuff.
Yeah. Well, actually, that's a good segue to the first part of the show. And then, by the way, as I said, Dr. Andrew Bell, Chicago Botanic Garden, Pat Etherington from the Care of Trees. Trees will be the second hour. So get your tree questions ready for the second hour about planting trees, about which trees do you want to plant? How do you choose them for climate change? And, of course, Rick DeMaio weather, 9:45 today or thereabouts. And we'll ask him about the 1,000-year flood. I'm kind of interested in what he's been telling his classes about why that happens. But this is all very interesting, and it leads to the discussion for the first hour, which is to say, here we have this 1,000-year flood, and we have perhaps the release of chemicals that should not be released into our environment, and it's all because we're busily trying to bring up this the natural gas in a way that we really haven't vetted in terms of how dangerous it is for our environment. I mean, we've done vertical hydraulic fracturing for a long time, but now we're doing the horizontal hydraulic fracturing, and we've talked about that on this show, and talked a little bit about it on Thursday. I went to the this all kind of ties in because I went to the Environmental Leadership Dinner for the Illinois Environmental Council, their 11th annual.
I was so sad to miss that. How was it?
It was cool.
Yeah.
In fact,
great attendance.
Excellent attendance.
Yeah, they're a fantastic organization.
You know who was there? The Gov.
The Gov.
The Gov.
I saw some
the
of
Gov,
the photos.
The
yeah.
Gov was there.
You know, and I know people have issues with him, but I got to say, when I've seen him speak at the IEC dinner before in the past, you know, he off the cuff can say, hey, there's Mike Novak, and he does such and such.
Well, he doesn't recognize me, but other than that.
But he knows a lot of people in the room, and he'll acknowledge them. He doesn't have a prompter telling him. I don't know.
That's how good politicians can do that. Okay.
It's good. It's impressive.
And, you know,
I think it's genuine. I don't think it's, you know, manipulative, like I'm going to stroke your back.
You know, I don't know. I don't know the guy well enough.
Maybe I'm gullible.
I did, as they were applauding him and giving him a standing O, I wanted to shout out, what about Starved Rock? What about fracking?
Well,
in
I would
Illinois.
Love to talk to him about Starved Rock.
I would too.
I don't know.
Because there has been precious little information coming out of the governor's office about that sand mine.
Yeah, I don't know.
And you know, and that's the thing. The organization and those organizations, the powers that be, recognize Mr. Quinn as the environmental governor, but there are some gaps. And I wish we had an answer to why there are some gaps in that. Okay. You know, that's the way those things go. And I was very inspired by Dale, I think it's Dale Brick. Is that how you pronounce it? B-R-Y-K? I should know. Because I was there, but she is with the Natural Resources Defense Council, director of the NRDC's Energy and Transportation Program. And I really enjoyed her talk because it was very down to earth. And basically she started talking about how, you know, in the midst of all this rush to get protect coal and protect fracking, and we've got the technology to do the alternative energy right now.
Thank you.
And you've been saying that forever.
Constantly.
Yeah, and you say, and we need to continue to hammer it home. But that's what she was talking about in the room. It's like, it's a done deal. Why are we not just moving forward on all of this?
Right. Well, you know, it comes down to they have more lobbyists and a louder voice because they can buy advertising that says clean coal is so fabulous. They can, you know, put on, you know, bright, happy, colorful ads from BP showing people playing in the Gulf. And, you know, and the renewable industry doesn't have all those dollars to sink into that kind of PR and that advertising campaign. And so they really want the public to not realize because, of course, you know, the more people who put solar on their house, the less customers they have. So it is, you know, a bit of an issue. But
yeah, but what, so why don't they invest in solar?
Well,
Get some skin in the game, you know?
Some are definitely starting to and realizing, you know, that that's the way to go. I mean, just look, we have the largest urban solar field here in Illinois. Right in Chicago with a 10 megawatt system. Yeah, it's something to be very proud of.
Yeah.
It powers.
Now, people don't know that.
Homes.
I mean, I started that off. And by the way, if you want to read some good stuff on this, go to my website, mikenovak.net. Go to this week's show. And not because I wrote it, but because Lisa wrote it. She sort of covers this topic in some detail. And if you don't, you know, if you have a little bit of time, and you want to take a look at it, please do, because Lisa wrote some great stuff, and she's been a proponent of this for so long. So I got inspired by this talk, by the keynote on Thursday, and I immediately texted Lisa, and I said, let's just do this on Saturday. We've been talking, because what happens is we get off the air here, and Lisa then starts ranting about alternative energy, and I say to her, well, we got to talk about that on when actually the microphones are turned on.
Well, because here's why I love renewable energy so much. You know, big wind can solve, you know, a lot of problems. And it's, you know, out in rural areas where, you know, it helps farmers because they're getting funding, you know, they're getting money for every footprint that the wind industry puts out there. Solar has a unique role in the market, and that is that it has the ability to deliver energy right where it's needed. So we don't need big power lines, we don't need transmission, and we can actually ease the grid. So I think a lot of people are are aware because of brownouts, and you know, anytime we have a storm roll through, power lines go down. And so the more that we can ease the burden on the grid and create our energy right where we need it, the better it is for everybody. It's so efficient. It's such an efficient solution.
Do we actually have the grid to handle solar, though? I mean, part of our problem is that our grid is terribly inefficient.
It is.
When I say grid, I'm talking about the whole country. We should, as a country, be able to deliver the energy wherever we need it without the appreciable loss of that energy and along the way, and that's part of our problem, is it not?
And one of the big challenges is that we don't have big, high voltage transmission lines out in some of those more rural areas. So part of the challenge with a huge wind farm is being able to get the power from that wind and to the municipalities, you know, that can serve. The same thing with big solar. If we, you know, continue to build big and utility scale solar, it has been going in so rapidly compared to the past. I think just this last quarter, we installed 1.5. This year, we've installed about 1.5 gigawatts of solar out in some of the deserts. The challenge is trying to get those transmission lines so that it can serve the population. So, yes, the grid definitely has some challenges and needs some work. In many places, it's spider webs and needs some upgrading. And that is something that, you know, even ComEd has been working very hard on here in the area. And smart meters and things like that are supposed to help with some of those issues.
So I invite folks, because we're going to wax poetic on this for just a little bit this morning, 773-763-9278. If you want to jump into the conversation, love to hear what folks have to say about this. The other thing that I became aware of the other day, maybe it was just a couple of days ago, maybe yesterday, I can't remember, somebody accusing the Obama. Oh, no, I guess it was Boehner. There we go. John Boehner. Our illustrious Speaker of the House. Oh, he accused the Obama administration of having a war on coal. And
I'm okay with that.
I am too. That was going to be my point. Why don't we make it official?
Right.
It's a war on coal. Yes. You know why? Because coal is killing us. Mm-hmm. Coal is destroying our environment. Coal is destroying our air. And we're raping our landscapes to use it, and it's not necessary to have. So there are probably people who want to dance around this and say, no. We don't have a war on coal. My feeling is, yeah. Total war on coal. It needs to go. It's outdated. We have the energy of the sun at our disposal. Yeah.
Did you see one of the statistics I put in the blog was that enough sunshine strikes the planet in 20 days to equal everything that we have in the ground. All of the coal, all of the natural gas, all of the oil. 20 days of sunlight equals everything on the planet. But no, hey, let's dig up the planet and put things at risk.
And as you also pointed out,
water.
And as you pointed out, it gets easier and easier to tap into the sun and harder to tap into our fossil fuels.
And that's why I feel like this debate is hopefully going to be a flash in the pan, because as utilities start looking at their potential fuel sources, you know, there are communities that are looking to decide, you know, what, because some municipalities provide their own power. And as their own systems are becoming antiquated and aged out, they are discovering that new solar is cheaper than new anything else. And I know I've said this on the air before. And that to me is encouraging. So I think, you know, when people say, well, let the market decide, well, the market's going to decide and coal's going to be left behind. And that's good news. We're going to need some transition because it takes a little time to get. You know, it took 150 years to get the system we have in place, and solar is only 50 years old. So give us a little time, and we're going to catch up fast.
And let me make something clear. When I declare war on coal, and this show has now officially declared war on coal. Wait, there we go.
There we go.
I'm not declaring war on coal miners and their families.
Nope.
There's a lot of people, let's look at the last 50 years, who have lost jobs because the technology has changed. That's what happens when you move forward in technology. So if it can happen in other, you know,
what happened to those poor people working in the VHS industry?
The VHS.
No one came up and filed for beta tapes.
Jeez. You know, sorry. and it's cynical and disingenuous of people like John Boehner to say, I'm just trying to protect those jobs. No, you're not. You're a tool. You're a tool for the fossil fuel industry, and you're using that as your cover. That's why you say that stuff. 773-763-9278. We actually have a call about this, and I think it's right up your alley, Lisa.
All right.
So let us go to the phone. Whoop. And bring in Dave. Dave, you're on the Mike Novak Show.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I'm going to make this somewhat brief and hopefully take your answer off the phone, because I'm actually getting ready to go to church.
Hey, Dave.
Yeah.
Say hi to God for me, would you please?
Give me your best. But yeah, my question is, you know, just as a consumer, for a home, let's say a 1,800 square foot home, is it cost allowable or cost prohibitive, let's say, to look into installing solar as a primary or backup power source for a house?
Yes, that's a great question. Okay. And probably the number one that we get. So looking, although...
All right, now, do you want to have a conversation here, Dave, about this, or do you just want to hear this? But Lisa, you probably have a few more questions to ask Dave, don't you?
I tell you what, why don't you ask me the questions, I'll answer them quick, and then I do have to go.
Yeah. Okay.
The first thing to look at is the amount of space that you have is typically a little more helpful when you're looking at a heating load. When we're looking at your electricity, take a peek at your electric bill. Do you have some idea on average how many kilowatt hours you're using?
Kilowatt, I couldn't tell you. What I could tell you is that, for example, I mean, we've got two small kids, elementary school, my wife and I work. So it really isn't that prohibitive, or that I should say that large. Typical suburban family type of situation, if that gives you any sort of an idea.
No, that's great. Usually what we find, so when I'm looking at a house, I look at three variables. The first, I look at the space on the roof. That's going to tell me the most I can do.
Okay.
Then I look at your utility bill. That tells me the most I should do. Because with the way that net metering rules work in Illinois, and that's an agreement between you and the utility to feed energy back, you want to make sure that you're never producing a net over the course of the year more than you're consuming. So we don't want to give free energy to the utility.
Yeah.
And then your budget. And so you can tweak those three things. Typically, most rooftops that we find here, you can get somewhere between 3 kilowatts, which would be 12 panels, to 5 kilowatts, which is, you know, more around 20 panels. And so, you know, so it's really based on how much I can get on the roof. That usually is the determining factor here in Illinois. Looking, a panel is 3.5 feet by 5.5 feet, so roughly about 18 square feet. So when you're looking at your roof, you can kind of get some ballpark ideas. Google Earth actually has a ruler tool that you can measure your roof without getting up there.
Really?
Yeah, pretty neat. Yeah. You know, so
while they're spying on you, you can actually measure your roof too. Yeah.
And then I would say, roughly speaking, in Illinois, solar is installing for about $5.50 a watt. So a 3 kilowatt system times $5.50 is going to be about $16,000.
Okay. And there's, aren't there,
there's some great incentives. So the state of Illinois just announced their rebate program.
When you say $16,000, that's before rebates.
That's before incentives. Yes.
Incentives.
So the federal government gives you a 30% tax credit. That's set into law until 2016. So you can take 30% right off the top. So there's $5,000 gone right there.
Okay.
Then the state of Illinois has a rebate program. It's currently open. It's a little different this year. They're doing a lottery system. So they're accepting applications now until October 31st, at which point they will assign a random number to all applications and then serve them, you know, in numeric order. And they're going to probably release somewhere around 150 awards right off the bat. And then as those systems get installed and get built and the money's leave the state funds, which they have about $1.5 million, they'll send out more. So they'll probably fund somewhere around 200, 225 systems. They anticipate they'll probably get about 400 applications.
Okay. Well, thank you. I appreciate it.
Great.
Yeah. Well, Dave, I know you got to get going. We're going to continue to discuss this. And enjoy church, and I hope you catch a little more information before you duck in there.
Great, thank you.
All right, thanks for calling. 773-763-9278. So, $16,000, you get rebates, you get incentives. How do you figure out the savings from taking that, being mm-hmm. off the grid there, mm-hmm. and bringing it into the grid. How do you translate that?
So there's a tool that I love called PV Watts. It's run, if you Google this and you put PV Watts, it should come right up. It will take historic weather data from all around wherever you put in your zip code, or there's a map of the U.S. And so you tap on wherever the nearest major city from where you live. And then you put in the size of the array. You put in the direction your house is towards south. And
that really makes a difference, doesn't it?
I mean,
because you and I have talked about this and you said, well, which way is your roof face? And I said, well, it's got various directions, but mainly it's east-west. And you went, well, I don't know.
Depending on the pitch of your roof, you could lose anywhere from 5 to 15% based on orientation. So solar does work off ambient light, but direct sunlight's always going to be the most efficient. So the most you're going to get off your roof is going to have a southern direction in our hemisphere. Mm-hmm. I was talking to a friend in Australia, and I had to flip our whole conversation.
You know, it's funny because I had a conversation recently with a horticulturist who was talking about the seasons and fall and spring. Their fall is our spring, so he kept talking, and I thought, how do they do that? How do they keep all that straight? Your issue is, yeah, right. Well, it's like the water draining the other way, too, in the southern hemisphere. So this tool.
So PV Watts, you put in where you are, you put in the pitch of your roof, you put in the size of your system and the orientation you are to due south, and it will factor in the weather. So when people say, oh, well, we can't do solar here in Illinois, well, it's not true. You just lose a little bit of performance, and you lose it in the worst months, which is November, December, and January, when we're not using a ton of electricity anyway. Mm-hmm. Most of our electricity is used in the summer months when we can actually outperform Miami because we have cooler summers than Miami does. So, so there are some advantages to being here in the Midwest. But the PV Watts tool will give you a month-by-month output of how much that array will do in terms of kilowatt hours, which is how the utility bills you. And then you can stack that up against your bill. And you could say, oh, look at that. In April, I'm doing 120% of my load. I'm actually producing more energy than I need. And then in, you know,
can
August.
Can you store that somehow? How does that work? And then you transfer that to your utility and they give you a credit or something?
You backfeed into the utility, and that's called net metering. So the utility is required by law in Illinois. And that's a little bit of a problem that we're working on right now. ComEd is and Ameren have it down pretty well, where they're able to track the amount of energy that you put back into the grid, and they give it to you kind of like a rollover minute, the way that a cell phone carrier does. And so they're able to track that. Some of the new suppliers in the market are not compliant with the law. I don't know they all knew what the laws were when they came into the marketplace. So we're
when you say you mean the electrical.
Some of the electric suppliers that have come in through deregulation.
So you're saying that, wait, they just said, okay, let's sell electricity. Oops, we forgot to look up the law.
Pretty much, yeah. Oh, so the Illinois Commerce Commission has been working, Environmental Law and Policy Center, the Solar Energy Institute, Illinois Solar Energy Association, a number of folks have been working and collaborating together to fix that problem so that all providers will be able to do net metering. So there's a little bit of a problem. So most of the time we suggest going with ComEd.
All right. We're going to get right back to that. Maurice is on the phone. He's got a comment. It's 773-763-9278. This is the Mike Novak Show on Chicago's Progressive Talk AM and FM. That is Lisa Albrecht, our resident energy expert. Everybody needs a resident energy expert on their radio show or in their home. Somebody just kind of hangs out in the garage, and then every now and then you wander back there and say, hey, could you give me some advice on this? And that's what she's doing today. Christy Weber is sure that you have had your calendars marked for weeks in anticipation of the Christy Weber Landscapes Farm and Garden Center's Fall Harvest Festival, and it's next weekend, Saturday and Sunday, September 28th and 29th. There's a petting zoo. Mini maze, face painting, pansy potting. You can even build your own scarecrow. And if you're thinking about fall lawn care, maybe while you're there, take advantage of fall magic mixture from Jonathan Green. In the fall, the soil is still warm, but the air is cooler. Fewer weeds compete against your lawn. And as trees are starting to shed their leaves, there's more sunlight, which is good for your solar panels as well. Also, diseases that attack seedlings are less active. Or maybe you're thinking about our feathered friends. The right hook or bracket can organize your garden, make reaching hanging plants easier, facilitate bird feeding, and beautify your space. So Christy Weber carries Irva brand hooks and brackets, and they're made right down the street. How cool is that? Irva has a USA-made hook, deck, bracket, pole, or shepherd staff to meet every bird feeding application. And right now, get 50% off all Irva products in the store. Follow Christy Weber Landscapes on Facebook or go to ChristyWeber.com to find out more. And, of course, the big Farm and Garden Center Fall Harvest Festival next weekend, Saturday and Sunday, September 28th and 29th. Christy Weber Landscapes, right in your own backyard.
Hi, my name is Peggy, and I publish Chicago's only local magazine dedicated to healthy and sustainable living. Natural Awakenings is available monthly, and we provide the latest news and trends about healthful living, including alternative and complementary medicine, fitness, good food and drink, healthy kids and families, and even healthy pets. Natural Awakenings also talks about local sustainability, gardening and environment, energy conservation, and green living. We feature local news and a calendar to help you stay connected. I can guarantee that each month you'll discover a new health tip, a tasty recipe, a service in your neighborhood, something that makes your life better. Natural Awakenings is free and available throughout the city and suburbs or online at nachicagonorth.com. Call us today at 847-858-3697 to learn more. That's 847-858-3697. Natural Awakenings. Feel good, live simply, laugh more.
If you want something absolutely spectacular for your spring yard, D. Landreth Seed Company suggests the Fritillaria Imperialis Crown Imperials, Rubrum and Lutea. If you haven't grown these plants, you need to do it at least once in your life because they're so cool. I've grown them. myself. Rubrum grows to a height of 24 to 36 inches and produces a crown of orange red blossoms. It's about as exotic a bulb as you can possibly imagine. It's native to the high deserts of Iran, Turkey, Iraq, Afghanistan, Pakistan, and Kashmir, and were introduced into Europe in the 16th century as part of the first wave of exotic bulbs brought from Constantinople, sometimes called Istanbul. These bulbs need to be planted on their sides, oddly enough, because the bulb has a deep cavity in the top, which when filled with water can cause the plant to rot quite quickly. Crown Imperials need a rich alkaline soil. We certainly have alkaline soil here. And they need to be planted quite deep, 12 inches. Don't cheat. Get the ruler out. And planting Crown Imperials too shallow, excuse me, is the single biggest reason that they do not flower. All fertile areas need to be kept very dry when dormant, so keep this in mind when choosing a place for them in your garden. You can find out more at LandrithSeeds.com or go to their Facebook page, Landrith Seed Co., or call 800-654-2407. 800-654-2407, D. Landrith Seed Company, purveyor of fine seeds since 1784.
Allergies acting up, trouble breathing, headaches, sinus pressure, you're tired, congested. Isn't it time to feel better? Breathe deeply and easily. Get rid of the symptoms that complicate your life. Dr. Bonnie Flaster is an acupuncturist and chiropractor who helps people get rid of allergies without using drugs, shots, or needles. Call Dr. Flaster at River North Wellness Center, 312-642-7545, or go to rivernorthwellness.com to find out how to get your body feeling better so you can enjoy life again.
Bertolt's Garden Center in Elk Grove Village has a message for you. The beautiful season of autumn is upon us, at least as of about 3:44 this afternoon, Central Time. Fall is one of the best times to plant. It's time to change up those summer planters, add to your landscapes, and take advantage of the cooler weather. At Bertolds, you'll find an assortment of mums, pansies, accent plants, as well as a variety of pumpkins, unique gourds, corn stalks, and straw. The gift shop abounds with fall decor and new Halloween items. Then there are trees, shrubs, rose bushes, ground covers, and select perennials on sale now for 35% off. That's a great price. Fruit trees and berries, flowering tropical plants, and citrus trees are 50% off. Not only that, but you get great advice and products to get your landscape in great shape this fall for a spectacular spring. Bertolds Garden Center is located at 434 East Devon Avenue in Elk Grove Village, just west of O'Hare Airport. Look for the iconic windmill out front or go to Bertolds Garden Center. It's the Mike Novak Show on Chicago's Progressive Talk, AM and FM. Lisa Albrecht, part of the team. Our alternative energy expert is here today, and we're chatting a little bit about that. Let's immediately go back to the phones and talk to Maurice. You're on the Mike Novak Show. Good morning.
Hello, Mike. Hello, Lisa. Thank you, Lisa, for pointing out the fact that in Illinois, unlike other states, when you feed more back into the grid, you are not compensated for that. There are other states, and I guess there must have been some substantial lobbying by the utilities to get that done, but I'm not usually in favor of a lobbyist, but I think we have to do some lobbying. I've been an advocate for persons to adopt solar. I look totally with dismay on the removal of the solar panels under James Earl Carter's administration by the succeeding administration. I think our country could be in a lot better position with respect to energy had that not been done. But yeah, we've got a situation here in Illinois which is unique. There are national advertisers of solar systems that say, hey, you get a check back from the utility. Not true in Illinois.
No, you're right, Maurice.
That's not good. That's a crime.
It's not good, and it's one of the reasons why a good solar installer is going to look to see how much you're doing. We do net meter on a month to month basis, but on a year to year basis, if you carry too many credits, they will be zeroed out at the end of a year. So
No. That
is definitely something that we need to tackle. We've got some other things that we're tackling right now first, and then we'll come back and tackle that one. Unfortunately, you know, sometimes these legislative processes take a little bit of time as they, you know, and we have a big education thing. I don't know that people are necessarily anti-solar as much as there's just a lot of misinformation out there. And so in October, we are, the Illinois Solar Energy Association is participating. We have the unique opportunity that Chicago is hosting Solar Power International, one of the largest conventions. And so on October 21st, we are hosting a legislative roundtable where we're inviting legislators to come and sit down and talk to solar experts across the country so that they can see what they're missing out on. I think that'll be a really great opportunity to overcome some of those educational hurdles that we have here in Illinois. Because when I go down to Springfield and talk, a lot of folks don't know that it's happening. They don't know that it's a viable industry. They don't even know that consumers are interested in it. And yet a poll suggested that 89.7% of Illinois consumers are in favor of more solar in state. So it's politically popular.
You can help me. Give me a guest ticket to the October conference. I've been thinking of signing up, and because I would be of significant value and help to you in lobbying, even at the federal level. I happen to know some guy with big ears and big aspirations, and he's now got a big White House.
Okay. Yeah, no, message me separately.
Could you get me invited there for dinner sometime, too, Maurice? That would be kind of fun.
My father-in-law recently had dinner there.
Wow.
He's the guy who set up two trains to go to the March on Washington in 1963.
Yeah. So, wow. Yeah, no, if you could message me separately, we can talk a little bit more about, you know, teaming up together.
All right.
That would be fabulous.
I like having people with connections listening to the show.
I wanted to point, you know,
and I'm going to let you go, Maurice, because I got a couple more calls I'm going to try to squeeze in here. But thank you so much for your participation.
You're welcome. Broadcast your message so I can get back to you.
All right.
Fabulous. Thank you.
Take care. Yes, Lisa, you were going to say.
So we're another piece of legislation that we're working on right now that's very near and dear to my heart and have been working very hard on this year, and that is the Renewable Portfolio Standard.
RPS, which nobody understands. I've read up on it, and I still don't get it.
Right. So in other states, there are other financial tools that are available. So Illinois has what's called a Renewable Portfolio Standard, which says that of all of our energy, by 2025, 25% of it needs to be clean. It's a fantastic goal. You know, Illinois is very visionary in very many respects. What we lack is sometimes the muscle and the teeth to get the job done. So there's a financial tool out there that makes it possible for us to encourage renewable installations. What that is called a renewable energy credit. Basically, if you think of yourself not as a consumer who has solar on your roof, but as a micro utility. As a micro utility, what I'm adding into the marketplace of value is clean energy, not dirty energy. So I get rewarded that my energy is worth more. So you get what's called a renewable energy credit, and you get paid, kind of like a stock certificate, each year on your energy output. And it's not on what's left over, which is what net metering is. It's based on your total energy output, how much footprint you reduced from a polluting source. And so we have that here in Illinois, but unfortunately, it's a little complicated.
It's very complicated.
It's very complicated.
I mean, the keynote at the Environmental Leadership said the same thing that you say all the time. She got up there on the stage and she was, you know, in favor of redoing the RPS. And she said, except it's very complicated. And I really can't explain it because it's really complicated. Right. Why is it so complicated?
Well, because energy in Illinois is complex. So we have the Illinois Power Authority who buys all of our power on behalf of all Illinois citizens. There's an auction process that happens. They're required to have so much from each power source, coal, nuclear, natural gas, whatever. And then renewables are part of that mixture. The utilities, the energy suppliers who give you your bills, they they chip in some money into this fund, and then this fund is what's used to pay for the renewable energy credits. So consumers are already paying this amount. Mm-hmm. What we want to do is, instead of having the people who give you the bill make this charge, we actually would like to move that charge up one layer, so the people who give you the electricity, so Exelon, really, so we would just move the charge up, so it didn't matter who was doing the bill. Mm-hmm. It would give us a secure, predictable fund that the Illinois Power Authority could then enter into long-term agreements with consumers.
Let's take one more quick call, and that's Amtrak. Tim, hey, how you doing, Tim?
I'm doing good. You guys are talking about this subject, and I really need to put my 2 cents in.
All right, you got about give me a minute to put your 2 cents in. Go for it.
Okay. What I'd like to have the person you got there with you address is how we're not going to have the same failure as they've had in Germany with wind and solar. In Germany, they're importing $176 million of nuclear power from the Czech Republic. The Czechs are so excited about the stupidity of the Germans going wind and solar, they're going to build 6 new nuclear power plants in the next about 10 years to make up for the shortfall that they're going to have going wind and solar route and shutting down coal and nuclear. So how are we not going to replicate in this country the same failure they've had in Germany?
Lisa?
I don't know all of the ins and outs of what Germany is doing, but Germany has a commitment towards clean energy. They're not putting new nuclear into their own mixture. New nuclear, I'll be surprised if those new nuclear plants get built. When people are looking at new nuclear, they don't know what the price tag is going to be for those new nuclear plants. So the people actually putting the price tag on the plants can't tell you how much it's going to cost and when it's going to be installed.
You know,
that's not true. The CHES has already got a contract. They're already working on contracts with Westinghouse at Temelin and at Bukovany, and they have 2 more at an undisclosed site. But they're definitely going to put 2 more at
plants run way over cost and way over time.
All right.
That's not true.
All right. You know,
right now they're putting at AP1000s in China and they're coming in cost.
Tim, you always have a interesting and controversial comments. And of course, it came right at the end of the conversation where we can't really delve into it because I got to get to Rick DeMaio. But all right.
No problem.
It's something for us to look at.
Energy Alliance people
on. I knew you were going to ask that, and now you've reminded me. And you know what? I think thorium. Tim is a big proponent of thorium nuclear. It does show some promise, and I have some folks lined up, and I'm going to get a hold of them, and we'll bring them on the show. Thanks for calling in, Tim. Bye-bye. We're out of time for this, but we will continue this conversation about energy, and we need to get to Rick DeMaio. But a simple change in your lawn care practices this fall can create a carpet of green next spring that's safe for children and pets. When the weather begins to cool, your lawn starts to build back its root system and needs extra nourishment. That's why experts agree that fall is the best time to fertilize your lawn. Most lawn fertilizers release their nutrients quickly, which produces lots of clippings and reduces root growth. But Milorganite, an organic nitrogen fertilizer, feeds your lawn slowly throughout the fall, providing more green color with fewer clippings and maximum recovery from summer stress. It's a trick golf course superintendents have used for decades. Milorganite applied now will help your lawn green up faster in spring while helping it recover quickly from winter damage. You'll improve your lawn's overall health and greatly reduce weed problems. So give your lawn the food it needs. Milorganite for better results naturally. Visit Milorganite.com for a garden center near you.
Want to make a positive move in the housing market? Replace your siding and windows. You'll improve your home's look and energy efficiency, too.
Trust DR Services Unlimited, 847-998-1687 for your remodeling and energy needs. Siding, windows, solar and wind power, and more. Rated A-plus by the Better Business Bureau and recommended on Angie's List. DR is a proud member of NARI. DR provides exceptional quality at a fair price. Contact DR at 847-998-1687 or at RestoreTheNorthShore.com.
Here's a tip from the Care of Trees. We're entering fall, as I've said several times today, and it's a great time to plant trees, which we'll talk about later in the show, with an arborist from the Care of Trees. In the fall, the fairly stable air and soil temperatures and favorable soil moisture levels promote good root development. Here are some other suggestions. Do your homework before buying a tree. Are you looking for a large shade tree or a small ornamental tree? Know your soil conditions, soil texture, moisture, pH, and how much room is available above to the side and below at your intended planting site so you know what tree will work best. Be sure to locate any underground utilities that may be present and understand how to plant your tree properly. When digging, a wide, shallow hole is better than a deep, narrow hole. Don't ever plant your tree below grade. You know, where it grew and before being dug up to move to your place, that's the level it needs to be at. To find out more about the water needs, planting needs for your trees, contact a certified arborist at the Care of Trees. Call 800-508-9466 for a free consultation. 800-508-9466 or go to thecareoftrees.com. The Care of Trees, a Davey company. Their business is people and their love for trees. It's the Mike Novak Show on Chicago's Progressive Talk, AM and FM. It's that time of the show where we bring in meteorologist Rick DeMaio. How you doing this morning, Rick?
Happy fall, Mike.
Good yeah. Morning, it's woohoo! Wait, there we go. Happy fall, everybody.
Yeah,
that's the best I can do.
What's that? I'm sorry.
I just said that's the best I can do. That's all I got.
Oh, that's right. I mean, it's odd that we always get so excited about spring, yet. Spring is usually a little bit cooler. There's still, you know, kind of compacted, muddy, slushy, snowy soil around. The trees aren't bloomed out. Doesn't look very nice out. And yet fall is always much better. The first day of fall, usually about 20 degrees warmer than the first day of spring. And this September, Mike, has been acting very unusual, almost more like the end of August rather than the middle of September, because our whole spring kind of summer season has kind of shifted. The whole thing kind of started about three and a half, four weeks late, as well as winter did. So it's kind of odd to have days in the 90s and heavy rain events in the middle of spring. That's exactly what we had this past week.
Yeah, and it was nice to see the rain. I know,
beautiful rain, yeah.
But some people got flooded out again, and
some people got flooded out. Yeah,
it's gotten to the point where there's a lot of us out there. Almost every time it rains now, we think, mm-hmm. I think I need to be home because I'm watching my basement, which is not a good thing.
No. And this is why, you know, President Obama came out with his climate action plan, again, trying to get some sort of traction with it. But, you know, as much as he's trying to do something, you know, here you have an extremely deadbeat Congress led by the inane, you know, actions of the Republican Congress trying to defund Obamacare, knowing quite well that it's not going to happen.
You know, I loved a few weeks ago when I had Dr. May Barenbaum from the University of Illinois, and we were talking about bees and CCD, which is called colony collapse disorder. But she said some of her friends call CCD congressional collapse disorder.
Yeah. You know, and I really don't understand it, Mike. It's all about a bunch of whiny, wealthy kids that don't get their way, and then they cry. And in the end, they're not going to get it done because they realize that they don't have the votes in the Senate, but they want to say that their constituents talk, which is really a bunch of garbage, because if their constituents would have talked, then we wouldn't have had the vote turn out the way it did in 2012.
Mm-hmm. I like Wound Up Rick.
What's that?
I like Wound Up Rick this morning.
Well, I mean, Lisa, it's so sad. It comes down to the point. It's like, when are you guys going to give up and realize that you lost?
Yeah.
When you lose, you go home and you try to figure out how to win the next battle. But don't just try to keep punching the same old punching bag over and over and over again. Well, you know what? There's a lot of people out there who like the affordable health care plan. Is it going to be perfect? No. Are there ways that we can improve it? Yes.
Right.
Maybe that's what we should be doing. And then when the president comes out with the climate action plan, which could, Mike, end up reducing some of these extremely heavy rain events, even if it's not completely associated with it, at least we're going in that direction. Because last time I checked, getting 15 to 18 inches of rain in a three-day period in Boulder, Colorado is not normal. It really isn't. Is it completely related to climate change? Probably not. But some of these nodes that we're getting on the bottom end and the top end of these waves of extreme weather just seems to be happening more and more. And this goes back to what you were saying, Mike. When it rains, do I have to be home to worry about flooding? And if we do have to be worried about that, and if we've already, I believe, passed the tipping scale, it's called adaption and mitigation. And that's pretty much what they did in the Boulder area with all the different flood control plans that they have. Yeah, did five people lose their lives? Yes. Was there an enormous amount of property damage? Yes. But I'm telling you, Mike, I was out there over the summertime. It could have been a lot worse when you think back to what happened in 1976 when the Big Thompson River Canyon flooded. 139 people lost their lives. Mm-hmm. They realized that they had people basically camping in a floodplain. And what they did in Boulder is they took the floodplain and they altered it so that when it does flood, you don't have catastrophes occur to the point we have 40 people die. And we've gone beyond that. And the president is trying to do something to say, let's look at whether or not there is a connection between the way humans are altering the atmosphere, the chemical composition, the physical composition. And here we are still going back to, well, we know you passed this law a couple of years ago. We know that the Supreme Court voted that it's actually legal, but now we're just not going to give you money to fund it. That's insane. I never, ever, ever hear in a Congress do such things, and yet we're doing it, and they feel good about it. That's the sad part about it.
Right, right. I'll be excited because, you know, the IPC, the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change, their fifth report is coming out on the 27th.
Yeah, and there's going to, you know, there's going to be the same blowback. Well, it's just
already started.
Yeah, it's true. As things are leaked from that, all that being said, and I appreciate your comments about that, Rick, because the Obama administration finally saying, okay, we're actually going to try to stem the release of carbon into the atmosphere, and there's going to be a lot of blowback on that too.
Yeah, and you know, while it's not going to be great, and I feel bad for Gina McCarthy, has to sit there and get all these comments back to her. Well, you're really not telling us everything. We're the first administration that's actually doing something about it, and it's constructive, and it has thought-provoking ideas, and it just it just blows my mind. I was very, very depressed when I heard that the Republican-led Congress, I should say, did that. So anyway, I know we have to get a forecast.
Yep.
And great cool weather upon us today. As you mentioned many times, fall arrives this afternoon. Sun's directly over the equator, so we're getting about 12 hours of both sun and night this time of the year. Mid-60s today, upper 60s, near 70 tomorrow, ditto on Tuesday, and then a little of a warm-up, and we could get back into a wet pattern, Mike, by the end of the week, and much of the rest of the month of September, believe it or not, looks to be above normal and above normal precipitation-wise. So I think we're going to do really, really good going into the non-growing season from a standpoint of subsoil moisture.
All right, I'll be watching my basement, and we'll talk to you next week, Rick.
Okay, Mike.
All right, trees in the second hour.
This hour of the Mike Novak Show is brought to you by The Care of Trees, a Davey company. Their business is people and their love for trees. And by Recycled Granite, featuring eco-friendly split stone veneers and handmade products by individuals with disabilities. Go to recycledgranite.com. And by Birchold's Floral Gift and Garden Center. Get green, let's get growing. Here he is again, Mike Novak.
What's not to like about the Gypsy Kings, huh?
Everything to like about the Gypsy Kings.
Oh, my goodness.
What a great way to wake up.
Yeah, really. Should we just play Gypsy Kings for the rest of the hour?
Sure, let's go for it. We'll just dance in studio.
Yeah. I mean, we got to, and I know that arborists love to dance, and
well, except that would be the downside because we have two fabulous arborists here that I'm excited to dig into.
Actually, technically, okay, now let's clarify this.
Okay.
Dr. Andrew Bell, who's in studio from the Chicago Botanic Garden, are you technically an arborist or a scientist? Well, how would you characterize, and slide that microphone over just a little bit.
I would say a scientist, yes.
Okay.
Yep. Botanist.
And sitting next to him, Pat Etherington from The Care of Trees, a Davey company and a great sponsor of the Mike Novak Show. You are a certified arborist.
I am a certified arborist.
Okay.
Which makes me half scientist, half artist. So,
you know, that's a really good way of putting that, because in dealing with trees, so much of it is art as well as science. And even the way we perceive trees. I think a lot of folks, they take it too far because they sometimes forget trees are living things. But I think a lot of folks look at trees as art, as living art, which is not a bad way to look at a tree. As long as you're willing to preserve your art, that's the key. And to preserve your living art, you need to water it and feed it and put it in the right circumstances and the situations. And that's why we're here, because Dr. Bell has been working on a study and creating an adaptive tree planting list. And basically, it's which trees are going to survive the rest of this century and into the future as climate change. And if you were catching any of the show before you came on in the 9 o'clock hour, especially when Rick DeMaio, our meteorologist, is on, who studies that and teaches climate change. And we're talking about alternative energy to mitigate climate change. And it's all interconnected. It's one of the things that I have found over the years as a radio host of this kind of show. I started as a gardener. Okay, let's talk gardening stuff. You cannot divorce that from the rest of what's going on around us. Mm-hmm. Especially when you talk about trees, oxygen, producing oxygen and taking carbon dioxide and just the inputs we have into our soils, whether it's water or chemicals or fertilizers, whatever we put, it's all interconnected. And that's the thing. And that's what I love about this job. That's absolutely what I love about this job. So, Dr. Bell, let's start with you. Why? Got you going on this study? How did this whole thing begin?
A couple years ago, I was working with the city of Chicago on a task force that was put together under Mayor Daley's administration. And we were developing a plan to preserve the existing urban forest here in Chicago.
What was that called again?
The Chicago Trees Initiative.
Right. It's just not there anymore, is it? It just sort of
gone dormant.
New administration and
different
priorities. And sure. I will say it. It's a shame. I liked the Chicago Tree Initiative. But continue.
Yeah. So we were doing some great work looking at how to protect the current urban forest, but also how to expand it. And in the process of this work, we were talking about, where we should be planting trees, what trees should we be planting. And at the same time, we were having conversations about climate change, but never having those conversations together. And people kept asking, well, what should we be planting today that will continue to not only survive, but thrive in a changing climate? And no one had a really good answer for that. And I knew my colleagues at the Botanic Garden were using climate change models to look at how species in their native habitats would respond and which areas they would continue to survive in the future with the effects of climate change. And so I spoke to them about, could we use those same models to look at trees in a cultivated setting? And they said, absolutely. So we, over the past 2 years, have been modeling species that are on the City of Chicago's urban tree planting list. We looked at 2020, 2050, and 2080 were the 3 decades that we looked at into the future.
How does one do that?
Did you have a temperature base? Do you change your watering out to 2080?
Right. So it's all based on predictive climate models, which are, widely available. Scientists are using them in all number of different disciplines, the various climate models that are out there. But yes, it is based on predictive changes in temperature and precipitation into the future.
Mm-hmm.
It's basically like weather models, how we get our forecast 3 and 4 days out, but we're looking decades out.
And you were also using the intergovernmental studies, right?
Yes, that's the organization that that worked together to develop the climate models for each of these future decades.
I have to make this statement because it struck me as I was putting this show together that here we are at the Chicago Botanic Garden and you're looking into the future and saying, okay, things are going to change, so we'd better be prepared for this change. You wouldn't do that if you thought that the intergovernmental agency was blowing smoke, okay, and creating stuff out of whole cloth. And yet, the report's going to come out in a few days, and it's going to be debunked in some circles, and it's going to be made fun of. And yet, we've got institutions like the Chicago Botanic Garden, which is not a small organization and an insignificant one, you're already making plans for the future and saying, no, this, we really need to pay attention to that. Meanwhile, we've got a whole category of people creating obfuscation and lying and being disingenuous and just anything you can to divert the discussion while people like you are already planning for the future. And I don't understand how the public cannot look at that and say, I'll put my money with the Chicago Botanic Garden because they're a scientific organization. And they say that the jury is in. And we know that things are changing and we have to adapt.
Mm-hmm. Well, we all run into skeptics, climate skeptics out there. And so it was important for me to be able to address that. So the list that we've developed, and it's not really that we developed it, we took the city of Chicago's current urban tree planting list and modeled those species. So everything on our list is currently recommended for planting in Chicago. So if nothing happens, nothing changes whatsoever with the climate, you'll be fine. So we're not recommending that you plant palm trees or things that we currently don't grow here.
Aw, rats. So, I was
done.
Yeah.
Oh, come on, I want a monkey puzzle tree on right. My block.
I want coconut. My own little coconut.
That's right outside your window, right?
Right.
So you can just lean out and pick coconuts
Yep. Whenever
you need them. Well, that's a really good point as well.
So I think what we really wanted to get to was these are the ones that you should not be planting that's currently recommended for planting here because mm-hmm. The models suggest or predict that they will not perform well in the future.
But you
some didn't survive.
Yes. We were able to do 50, and of the 50, 10 did not perform well in the model.
All right, what are those, the dirty 10?
Dirty 10.
Yeah.
I won't read them all off, but it was a...
only 10, come on.
Shagbark hickory, katsura tree, macchia, ironwood, Norway spruce, Black Hill spruce, Serbian spruce, the sergeant cherry, and then the native linden tree and the little leaf linden tree. So two species of tilia.
Now, there's a lot, just by you naming that list... It's a lot of things that pop up. First of all, I was at an event yesterday, the Frederick Law Olmsted event in Riverside. Mm-hmm. Ran into an arborist and some garden writers, and they knew all about you and they knew about your study, which is good. But the question was, why hickory? Why ironwood? You know, they were kind of curious and I think a little skeptical.
Mm-hmm.
So explain your reasoning in that regard.
Well, I can't explain the results that come out of computer models, but I would.
Oh, sure you can.
I can try to. But no, I was actually talking to Patrick just before we came in here and said the shagbark hickory was one that surprised me that it didn't.
Apparently it surprised other people too.
Mm-hmm. And so I am in their camp as well. So these are predictive models. They may not be completely accurate, but I think this is a starting point for this type of research. As I mentioned before, other people have used climate models to look at plants in their native habitats. But to the best of my knowledge, no one's done that in a cultivated setting.
Mm-hmm.
And we would like to continue this research and get more data points to have a stronger model, stronger results. And maybe that would change the outcomes. Maybe it would not. But yes, shagbark hickory was a surprise.
And are there other hickories that would do well?
That's the only one that we did.
Okay.
Again, it takes a long time to do this modeling.
And you're going to continue to do this, and I imagine you will update this as you move forward.
As funding is available. We're working on that right now.
It's always about the funding, isn't it?
I have my day job, and it's much more than just this. So yes, we'd like to continue it.
What is your day job?
I'm the curator at the Chicago Botanic Garden.
Oh, that day job. I thought maybe you were an entertainer or something.
Research is a small part of
and
my
that's,
appointment.
That's a really good point that you are the curator of woody plants at the Chicago Botanic Garden. Thank you for bringing that up. By the way, that is Dr. Andrew Bell, and he's in studio here. And if you have a question about the kinds of trees that you might want to choose, looking forward... Looking at 2050, which is the early, and as you move forward, you know, to 2080 or 2100, it's got to get harder and harder to kind of really know what's going to happen. 2050, I would think, is fairly predictable, but even that is, that's a ways away.
Well, for 2080, the results were so depressing, and then we also know that trees in an urban setting rarely live beyond 40 years anyway, so it's almost like, let's don't talk about 2080 because it's depressing what the models show, the results. And
well, now you just can't drop that bomb and walk away from it. Tell me what, and pull that microphone just a little bit closer. I'm going to ask you to do that. What were you seeing in 2080?
For 2080, only 10 of the 50 species maintained 50% of their climatic suitability here.
Goodness.
So
10?
Only 10.
Wow. See, and this is the scary stuff that we look at when I'm doing some of the climate stuff, because talking to, you know, as we look at, you know, you think of a tree as being, you know, fairly strong and sturdy. You know, they're this infrastructure that, you know, is a tree. What about more fragile plants like, I don't know, food? And how are those going to respond to changing climate?
Yeah.
We have to get smart.
We have to get smart. Did I give the phone number? I don't know if I did. 773-763-9278. 773-763-9278. Yes, Lisa?
It looks like we have a caller on hold.
Okay. We will get to that in just a second. I wanted to talk about you divide the category of trees. Categories of trees into legacy trees, and I don't have it all right in front of me, but it's like there's three. There's the ones that you think are going to live 60 years or longer or something, and then the ones that are in yards and parks, and then there are the ones that are in the sidewalks and as decoration. And I'll be honest with you, when I read that, I thought, why are you even including those trees? Because they die so quickly when, you know, they're in what we call tree pits. Mm-hmm. And some tree pits have soil in them. Some people are, you know, try to actually help those trees survive. Some tree pits are just surrounded by concrete. Mm-hmm. And the root ball is there, and whatever sustenance the tree can get out of that root ball. And it's usually, what, about 7 to 13 years worth, something like that? Right. Yeah, because those trees die very quickly. So my feeling is, why would you even include those trees in your study? Because they're short-term trees anyway. They're going to die quickly.
They are, but I think there are certainly situations where they survive longer than that, where you have higher levels of maintenance being given to these trees. That
yeah, some
survive.
People do.
Right.
Yeah. But we all know. I'll go by institutions that I frequent, like my bank, okay, that's got trees and tree pits outside. And sometimes I just want to say, have you guys watered that lately? You know, watered those trees? Do you just let them sit there? Because, again, this goes back to what we said at the top of the hour, which is a lot of people treat trees as art, and they fail to realize that a tree in a tree pit like that is not getting any nourishment. It's not getting any water. It's not going to survive unless you help it along a little bit. And if you like what's there, and it's often a honey locust or something like that, or a ginkgo, it's going to be gone. And so you have to take that into consideration as well. But like I'm saying, it's my feeling is that we got to pay attention to the trees that actually have a chance of living.
Right.
And that's kind of what you're doing here. Mm-hmm. So talk about the legacy trees a little bit. Do you see a decline in trees that we've already had? Let's say we've got trees now that are 50, 60 years old, and we're trying to get them to go to, you know, 120 years old. Is that going to happen, or will climate change affect those as well?
I definitely think it will affect those as well.
So we might lose some of our old, beautiful trees that have become icons. Mm-hmm. Simply because even if we're taking care of them, it's the climate itself is going to do the damage?
I think if they're in a residential planting, they probably would fare a little bit better if they're being cared for. Trees already have a number of stresses on them in the urban environment, and then climate change is going to add one more stressor to that, and that may be the tipping point for many of them.
You know, one of your Pat Etherington from the Care of Trees is also here. One of your colleagues, Sean Kingzette, often says to me, he says, there's no such thing as normal soil in an urban or suburban setting. And I think he's right. And that's part of the deal here, too, is that, as you said, Dr. Bell, trees are stressed to begin with. And that's because the soil has been altered so many ways and continues to be altered and affected by all the different things that we have in the city, runoff and chemicals that we use in the past, lead, which is not so much an issue, and just on and on and on. Let's take some phone calls, 773-763-9278. I've got more questions for you, but I want my listeners to be able to get involved. And let's go first to Dave in Madison. Good morning, Dave.
Hey, Mike. Another great show. It's very, very important. And I have a quick question. With regards to the recommended versus non-recommended trees for future adaptation to climate change, I'm wondering if it might be a mistake to not continue to plant natives with genetic diversity in the same time planting those that we may have a higher confidence that will survive, because to me, part of the adaptation issue is to make sure we have that genetic diversity for the adaptive flexibility over time. And so even with like the emerald ash borer, if we go in and cut all the ash down first, we lose any chance of having a genetic resistance that might be in one or two strains or individual trees. So I'm wondering, maybe an idea, and if you could comment on this, is not only to plant those that are recommended, but to continue to plant natives that we may get worried about, but at least have that as sort of a hedging of our bets.
You know, that's such a good question, Dave, because that was going to be one of my next questions. And
that's why it's good.
Yeah. Exactly. But you kind of preempted me on that. But that's what I was thinking, too, is that a number of the trees that you suggest, you're looking at survivability.
Mm-hmm.
Not necessarily are they native to the area, and if the climate changes, it doesn't really matter if they're native, because if that climate changes, even the native trees won't survive. But Dave's point is well taken, is we have to preserve the genetic history of these trees, and how do you take that into account?
Mm-hmm. Well, we weren't suggesting that not to plant natives. So mm-hmm. I don't think that's at all what we're suggesting, but and I think it gets back to the genetic diversity that exists within the native plants. Like, I remember reading in an article in the Chicago Tribune, someone said that the white oak tree, which is the state tree of Illinois, will no longer grow here in the future. And I don't know that I necessarily believe that, given that its, you know, native range extends all the way to the deep south, to northern Florida. So the native plants, they're probably going to shift northward, their native distribution ranges.
Mm-hmm.
But I think many of them will continue to grow well here in the Illinois area, Chicago area.
One other quick thing, Mike, just to ask a question. With regards to the natives versus non-natives and in some of these urban areas, is it good to fertilize them or not? And I'll hang up and listen, and thanks, you guys. Great show.
All right. Thanks, Dave. Always a pleasure hearing from you. Dr. Bell?
I think it's a good question for Patrick.
Okay, well, let's drag Patrick Etherington into this from the Care of Trees.
Well, fertilization is kind of a nebulous term. I mean, what are you trying to, it's always good to supplement, especially urban trees, because we've taken away, a lot of times trees try and fertilize and mulch themselves every fall, and we just pull that out from underneath them and put down things that favor turf.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, if by fertilizing you mean improving the soil, the nutrients that should be there for the tree, including the organic matter, then I think mulching is a key component to caring for any tree in an urban setting. I think a lot of times, like Mike said, you got a tree out in front of his bank that's been sitting in a poor planter, and it's not going to just make it on its own. So it may need some supplementing as it pulls nutrients out of the soil that it's growing in that aren't replaced. So I think fertilizing is important, but what are you looking to replace? You know, which nutrients, which organic compounds? So I'm going to say yes to the fertilizing, but with that caveat.
You know, it seems that that's the first place people go when they have problems, issues with their plants. They say, and especially trees for some reason, and I've never quite understood that. Folks say, my tree's in decline, should I fertilize? Yeah, and I always say, well, what are the symptoms? What are you? And I'm sure, Pat, you do the same thing on the job.
Yeah. Why is the tree declining? If it is nutrients, then supplementing it might help it. But if it's declining for lack of water or being too deep in the soil or being upset that we put a new house in 5 feet away from it.
It's sulking because you put in a new house. It took away half the root system.
Right. So it may need to do some things to help itself out before that fertilizing is going to be a real benefit to it. So
773-763-9278 is our telephone number. Let's go back to the phones. And Chris, you're on the Mike Novak Show. Good morning.
Good morning, everyone. I have a question for both gentlemen. As I'm sure you know, the suburbs are cutting down hundreds of thousands, maybe even millions of ash tree. I think Arlington Heights alone is cutting down like 10,000. What should they be planting in its in their place?
And I guess that's what this study is all about, right?
Yeah.
You know, but I'm glad you brought that up because I didn't go to that right away, Chris. But it's so, to me, it's so disturbing that that's our recourse. This is what we're doing. We are, you know, the ash tree is going to end up like the American chestnut, basically. There's going to be a few stands of mature trees. There's going to be, you know, a handful of them. Unless we find a way to defeat the emerald ash borer, which people are working feverishly to do right now. But it doesn't look good right now. And to have municipalities just chopping down these trees because they're preparing for the future, too. They want trees there, so they have to plant something else. It's heartbreaking is what it is. So let's get back to the question, and that is, what do you plant instead? But that's what your research has been all about.
Absolutely, and I think the short answer there is diversity. We didn't learn our lesson the first time around with the American elm, which was planted in great numbers in many urban areas in the U.S., and with the Dutch elm disease came in and wiped that out. We came back and pretty much planted it with ash, and now currently the city of Chicago has 11% of its tree canopy is ash, so we're going to have many holes throughout the city.
Do you think we're actually going to learn the lesson this time? Because I'll tell you right now, there's so many honey locusts in the city, you think all we need is for some disease, some insect to come along that doesn't like honey locusts, and now we'll lose all those trees as well.
My whole street would be done.
Yeah, well, but that's the problem.
Every other tree on my street is
should not be a honey locust, you know? And you guys...
Well, what is the right mixture? Because 10% sounds diverse to me. What is the right mixture?
How many different kinds of trees are there in the United States, all right? And to have 10, one out of 10, to be that one species... Mm-hmm. I wish I could find it. There's a rule of thumb about
30-20-10.
The what?
I think it's 30-20-10.
30-20-10. Are you familiar with that, either of you guys? I've used it on the show, and it's about which trees should be in different species and which should be in different cultivars. And I have to go look it up to find it. But
I'll find it.
Yeah. All right. Great. Thank you.
And one quick other question, if I could.
Sure.
What is the future, do you think, of our nice oak forests, like, you know, that we have in the forest preserves up here in the northern suburbs? And in fact, the oak forest that you have at the Botanic Gardens.
Good question. I don't know. I think it's a really good question for one of the ecologists that we have at the Botanic Garden.
Passing the buck, huh?
Yes, I am.
Well, on a related note, because I notice as I'm driving, you know, up to the suburbs to see my family, just an increase of the number of, it seems like just more tree falls. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if I've just never noticed as many trees, you know, just fallen in the forest preserves. I rode Saturday through Cook County Forest Preserves.
But if nobody heard it, it really didn't happen. Right. Okay. Sorry.
But I'm just curious about that. So did we answer the first question of what are we replacing the ash trees with?
Well, diversity. One of the rules of thumb is, and I use this when I do commercials for the care of trees, see what your neighbor's growing and plant something else. You know, and it's true. I mean, you might like it, but there's plenty of other trees out there that are going to be as good or better than what your neighbor has, especially if it's your neighbor has a Norway maple. Okay, it's my prejudice there. Let me ask you about Norway maple. I'm going to let you go, Chris.
Okay, thank you.
Thanks for calling. I appreciate that. Let me ask you about that. And then Rick DeMaio called, and he's got a question. Get to him in just a second. what about Norway maples and trees like that? Are they tough trees? Are they going to survive climate change? And if so, do we really have to plant them? Because I hate them.
Right. Well, they are tough trees. They do very well here. Very tolerant of urban landscape conditions.
Yeah.
But we know they are becoming invasive in certain areas of the country and potentially around here. And so it's not a tree that we recommend planting. It's actually on our invasive plant list at the Chicago Botanic Garden.
Yay.
But it's still a popular tree with the industry.
Is it really? Are they still planting those things?
I don't think so many homeowners are, but I certainly see people plant. They're certainly being grown by nurseries, and you see them listed in catalogs.
All right, let me ask the nursery industry, what the hell are you doing? What is wrong with you?
I think they're filling a need we have a limited palette of plants we can use in an urban setting that'll do well. And most people's yards is not an oak woodland to be preserved. And if they want a tree they can put in the ground and it'll grow kind of regardless of what happens, then Norway maple comes up. And so it gets planted because it does all right. Ecologically, no, it's a mess. But
yeah. What about silver maple?
I like silver maple, actually.
Sarah's giving silver maple a thumbs down. Thumbs down. Pull that mic over, Sarah.
It's the helicopters and the gutters.
And Pat, do you have an opinion about silver maple since we're all weighing in here?
Silver maple's a good tree, but it's a high-maintenance tree.
It is. It has some issues.
And to be fair, I get upset with people who are unwilling to do any maintenance. You know, who just want their world to be maintenance free, and it's like, no, that doesn't. And so they don't plant the female cultivars of anything because, oh my gosh, if it has fruit, oh, that's so messy. Oh, we can't deal with it. Meanwhile, we're sending off all this pollen from the males. Mm-hmm. You know, so what? And we have skyrocketing asthma in the country. And Tom Ogren, and I've talked about him before. He's a researcher who thinks that's connected. And I agree.
I think it's interesting because those male trees are all planted at schools.
Yeah. We have pollen corridors outside of schools and hospitals as well. It's insane.
But I think with the ginkgo, that's one tree that you have to be sexist with, you know.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. No, you don't want the female ginkgo. and interestingly, you do the study. And if you go to my website, MikeNovak.net, go to this week's show. I put a lot of the links from the Chicago Botanic Garden, including the comparison between the American linden and the which variety of ginkgo is that?
Autumn gold.
Yes. Autumn gold. The American linden, native tree. It's not going to fare well here. The ginkgo, much better. Mm-hmm. Now, the ginkgo might have been native 100,000 years ago, 100 million years ago. We don't know. It's basically not native to anything anymore, which is kind of weird. It's a gymnosperm, and it is basically a deciduous conifer. Drops its leaves, and you can tell just by looking at the leaves, it doesn't look like any other tree out there.
The ginkgo?
Yeah, it's a relic from when the planet was very, very different. It's actually kind of cool.
And it was one of the best performers in the study.
That's what I was saying,
Which explains why it's been here for 100 millions of years. It's survived everything.
Yeah.
So right. I know there's links on – oops, sorry.
Oh, no, go ahead.
I was going to say, I know there's links on the Mike Novak page, but I'm going to also link through from Facebook. I'm completely loving I'm embarrassed to say I've never been to the Chicago Botanic Gardens website, and particularly the section on trees and this study that you conducted. This is really cool website. I know nothing about trees, and now I feel so smart.
Let's take Rick's call, and then we will need to break. Meteorologist Rick DeMaio is back. How you doing, Rick?
Good.
I missed you.
Long-time listener, first-time caller.
Mike. Oh, cool.
do you guys, and Andrew and Pat, fascinating and very stimulating conversation. Do you guys remember the movie The Day After back in 1983?
No.
No, I don't.
I do.
Mike, you remember that. Do you want to explain them what that movie was about?
There's a lot of movies with similar. I think, is that the nuclear one?
Yeah, that was the one that actually was broadcast nationwide but by all the networks.
Yeah.
I think there was a Q&A before and after with Ted Koppel. I would like to have a movie called The Day After, and it basically represents what our landscape would look like without any trees.
Ooh. Mm. Yeah.
And I would really like to see something like that. I know we've had some weird sci-fi movies in the past, but this one may actually get the point across. Now, my question to you, Andrew, is this. As a meteorologist, we oftentimes have to explain the difference between weather and climate to people. I think we've done a pretty good job of that. However, what we've seen, though, in the last probably 5 to 10 years is the difference within climate, which is climate change and climate variability. And we often note that there is a certain forcing mechanism that change produces higher degrees of variability. And the higher degrees of variability are much more difficult to predict in a long-term climate model because of all these internal feedbacks. And I know you've probably have scratched your head many times, Andrew, on the results of some climate models. And there's been some climate models in the past that have some decent, you know, results and some that don't. And that's why we have all this discussion about it. But I think that's one of the things that we really need to get across to people is, as someone on the forefront or the front line, so to say, of meteorology, people just say, well, just tell me what's going to happen. And we often try to do that with climate models. Mm-hmm. And I think what we need to do with climate models is not tell them what the change is going to be, but what the variability is going to be. Because in the end, the variability turns out to be the weather. So in a sense, we're doing everything in reverse. Like this summer, Mike asked me at the beginning of the year, what's the summer going to be like? And I've learned through experience that you can't predict what the summer is going to be like. You can predict what the summer is going to behave like at the beginning, middle, and the end. And I think if Dave Upton Madison is listening to me, he's probably shaking his head yes, because at the beginning of the year, it was extremely wet. All of a sudden, within the last couple of weeks, we were going back into a drought in southern Wisconsin. And just this past Wednesday, people on the intersection of Midvale Road and University Avenue were driving with water up to their bumpers as 3 inches of rain came down. And we seem to see more and more of this variability. So how do we get that information to the public, particularly with the fact that the Botanic Gardens now has mm-hmm. such a fantastic place for people to learn more about climate?
Mm-hmm. Well, I think you're making a good point about the variability in weather patterns. And I think that's a good reason that one of the reasons we've tried to move away from the term global warming, because the public just thinks, oh, it's going to be hot all the time, and use the term climate change more, because with the warming with a warming climate, you're going to see more variability in wet weather patterns. So I think it's a really good point that with climate change, it's just more variability in wet weather events.
And I think as Mike has pointed out, and I've seen this many times, Mike, and this is when I was working for Fox, they were putting a whole new stretch of trees on Clark Street from Montrose all the way up to Andersonville. And the guy goes, hey, you work for Fox, right? I'm like, yeah. He goes, I want Walter Jacobson to come out here and measure the diameter of this tree and this root ball and tell the city of Chicago that these trees are not going to last. And I mentioned it to Walter, and he said, well, why does anybody really care about trees? But you know what? I think if this was now, Walter would probably do that story and do a really good story, Mike, about why those trees most likely don't have a survival rate of more than 2 to 4 years. It's because of the extreme variability and the lack of probably proper care after they're planted.
Yeah, or lack of care in planting, Pat.
That too.
And that's what we're going to get to. Rick, excellent points. Thank you so much for listening and coming back and calling in.
And very stimulating show, Mike. You are the best, without a doubt.
No, you are the best. I'll talk.
No, you are the best.
All right, you're right. I am.
Okay, bye.
Bye-bye. 773-763-9278. I need to take a break, and when we come back, this is your turn to shine, Pat, and talk about how we get those trees off to a good start. And that's partly what we're doing here. Dr. Bell, I hope you'll stick around as well.
Sure.
To 11 o'clock. We're counting down today to the autumnal equinox at 3:44 p.m. Chicago time. Get your party hats and noisemakers ready. And while you're counting down the minutes, grab a copy of the September-October issue of Chicagoland Gardening Magazine and read about the gardeners near Champaign, Illinois, who decided that they were going to make their front yard a showplace and put everything in it except the kitchen sink. Actually, that might be there, too. You can look at the beautiful photos and decide for yourself. If you don't have a large lot, you might take comfort in the story about the city lot in Chicago's Lincoln Park neighborhood that takes advantage of every bit of precious space available to make a statement. And if you just like an inspiring story, read about my buddy LaManda Joy and the Peterson Garden Project, which has helped thousands of Chicagoans to produce vegetables for their own dinner tables. Then there's my column on the inside back page. It has inspired many people to give up gardening and reading. Get a subscription to Chicagoland Gardening Magazine. I mean it. Go to ChicagolandGardening.com or call 888-265-3600. 888-265-3600.
Hi, my name is Peggy, and I don't want you to be left out. Here's what I'm talking about. Each month, more people turn to Natural Awakening Chicago to improve their lives than any other health or wellness magazine. If you're a green, natural health, or wellness business, you should be part of the leading sustainability resource in the country. Natural Awakenings is packed with information that our readers use to find the products and services they need to live happier, healthier lives. Natural Awakenings is available for free each month throughout the city and north and northwest suburbs. We're placed in more than 1,100 area locations, ensuring the right eyes read about your products and services. We're also online at nachicagonorth.com. We're local, we're independent, and our readers will help you grow your business. Call us today at 847-858-3697 to learn more. That's 847-858-3697. Natural Awakenings. Feel good, live simply, laugh more.
It's Dr. Wally's Tip of the Week, brought to you by Bertolt's Garden Center in Elk Grove Village. Dr. Wally knows that mums are a fall favorite. The problem is they often do not come back in the spring, so here's a few pointers for perennial success with mums. Number one, use a starter fertilizer containing mycorrhizae, like Dr. Earth starter fertilizer. Two, continue a watering schedule up until the ground is frozen. You need to provide your mums 1 inch of water per week on average. Three, when the ground begins to freeze, check your mums for heaving above ground. They will lift above ground an inch or two in the same shape of the pot they were planted in, and that's going to create an air pocket under the roots, which will fill with ice, and it could sever any established roots. Firm the plants back into the ground and add more mulch if necessary. And by the way, this happens with other fall-planted perennials as well. Bertolt's Garden Center, 434 East Devon Avenue in Elk Grove Village, just west of O'Hare Airport. Look for the iconic windmill out front or go to bertoltsgardencenter.com.
Spending more time at home these days? Give yourself some room. Renovate your basement or attic. You'll increase your living space and your home's resale value, too.
Trust DR Services Unlimited, 847-998-1687 for your remodeling needs, including additions, renovations, and other home improvements. Rated A-plus by the Better Business Bureau and recommended on Angie's List. DR is a proud member of NARI. DR provides exceptional quality at a fair price. Contact DR at 847-998-1687 or at RestoreTheNorthShore.com.
A simple change in your lawn care. By the way, we're going to bust you, Carol, here in a second, because apparently something got on Facebook. Did you take a photo for Facebook? Yeah. Yeah. Go ahead, Sarah.
I did. What's going on?
Is it nothing? Hey. Just I look very angry, but I was concentrating.
Oh.
She was focused.
You know what? I didn't notice that. And should
See,
I delete
now,
it?
Wait, if we,
Sarah's
no,
not angry,
no,
all of you
she's
listeners.
Not angry. She's, no, she's
a very
focused.
Happy woman.
Right. A simple change in your lawn care practices can create a carpet of green next spring that's safe for children and pets. When the weather begins to cool, your lawn starts to build back its root system and needs extra nourishment. That's why experts agree that fall is the best time to fertilize your lawn. Don't put it too close to a tree, as we always say. Most lawn fertilizers release their nutrients quickly, which produces a lot of clippings and reduces root growth. But Milorganite, an organic nitrogen fertilizer, feeds your lawn slowly throughout the fall, providing more green color with fewer clippings and maximum recovery from summer stress. It's a trick golf course superintendents have used for decades. Milorganite applied now will help your lawn green up faster in spring while helping it recover quickly from winter damage. You'll improve your lawn's overall health and greatly reduce weed problems. So, give your lawn the food it needs, Milorganite, for better results naturally. Visit Milorganite.com for a garden center near you. It's the Mike Novak Show on Chicago's Progressive Talk, AM and FM. I'm very pleased to have in the studio today Pat Etherington, who is from the Care of Trees, a Davey company, a great sponsor of the Mike Novak Show. Of course, Dr. Andrew Bell, who is from the Chicago Botanic Garden, is also here. Pat, your turn, buddy. Sidle up to the mic. What are people doing wrong when they plant trees? Give me the biggest mistake you see.
I think the biggest mistake just ties into what we were just talking about and is not getting the right tree in the right spot, and then you're setting it up to fail. So that's probably the biggest mistake.
Okay, that's a very broad category. How are ways that people do this wrong, put the wrong tree? Now, obviously, size, you don't count on a tree that's going to be 80 feet tall and you plant it, you know, 2 feet from the house, you got a problem, right?
Sure. How are you going to use the area around the tree? I mean, the helicopters is a good example. You shouldn't probably park the silver maple next to your house. You know, what do you want the tree to do? Do you want it to be, flower and look pretty? Do you want it to provide shade? So what are your goals for the tree? Is it fall color you're looking for? Those are the things you have to consider. And then once you figure what you want your tree to do for you, then start looking at places like the Botanic Garden and get on their website and figure out trees that'll meet those criteria, whether it's shade or flowers or fall color or all of the above or screening, and see. And they do a real good job of indicating what trees might grow. Is the site, and then you gotta look at the site. Is it wet site? Is it a dry site? Is it an exposed site? And marry those things, you know, you get the right tree and meet the site conditions, what we call microclimates. Those are probably the two most important things. And then actually just the mechanics of the planting, you know, get it planted right, plant it at the right time of year.
All right, that's the stop right there. Fall is a good time, at least now we're early fall, which starts today. Good time to plant some trees, but not all trees.
Correct.
What trees would you not advise? Maybe this is an easier way to do it. What would you not plant at this time of year?
It's tough to answer specifically. I might stay away from oaks unless they, you know, were dug earlier and bald and burlapped and taken care of over the summer. Some of the conifers I wouldn't push too late into the fall. Some of the evergreens.
Yeah, because I've heard that before, too. The conifers, this isn't. But you're saying that right now, it's kind of, this is still early enough where the ground's going to stay warm and the root systems are going to get out. And especially, I imagine, especially if you protect it, you mulch it properly going into the winter and keep it hydrated. And that's a key, too, because, all right, yeah, we had some good rains this week, but they were scattered. Not everybody got the rain that I got in my backyard. You know, not everybody's basement got flooded. And that's part of the problem is that folks see that and they think, oh, I'm covered. But we've been in a dry couple of months.
The last six, I think, have been, or the last 6 weeks have been like fourth or fifth driest on record. So you do have to pay attention to those things. It's a, you know, these are living organisms. And what's the local weather doing? And you're right, Mike, the rains have been really spotty all summer. Mm-hmm. Hadn't like the whole Chicago area been hit evenly. So you need to see what your local area got. So if your trees aren't getting, you know, an inch of water a week during the growing season, then you may need to be supplementing. And fall, you still need to keep the soils moist going as fall, especially with the evergreens and the conifers. They're still actually actively photosynthesizing and pulling water out of the soil. So that's true.
Yeah, I think folks don't understand just how late into the season the tree continues to, well, and if the ground's not frozen, there's always activity going on in the root system, right?
I think the
Dr. Bell's nodding too.
Yeah. I think the cutoff's about 40 degrees. It's still pretty active as long as the soil temperature is 40 or higher. And the soil stays warmer than the air conditions later in the year. So,
well, can we take a couple more phone calls here? And as you come up with ideas for planting, and I got some questions for you now too, but I want to get to some of these. Let's go to Ron, who's been holding on for a while. Ron, you're on the Mike Novak Show. Good morning.
Hi, Mike. Hi, Dr.
Bell
and Pat. I live in Fossmoor on about a third of an acre lot. We've got about a dozen or more trees, and they're very mature. We've been here 35 years, and more than half of them were here when we started. So they're mature. In the past couple of years, I mean, they're diversified too. You know, there's a couple of silver maples and a couple of honey locusts and a liliodendron and fruit trees and so forth. But in the past couple of years, especially the honey locusts have been dropping branches. And, you know, a lot of them are real old, 35 or more years, and very tall. And we're getting worried that they're unstable. And I was wondering what the wisdom is in getting a tree trimmer in, cutting off, you know, 20 or 25 feet from the top of the tree.
Well, we don't generally recommend taking the top part of the tree off like that. I know mechanically it seems to make sense if we reduce the height. If you're careful about selectively reducing the crown on a tree, especially a younger tree, they do respond well to that. But when you get into a mature tree and you're cutting very large limbs, the tree cannot actively cover over those wounds. And what you're doing is setting it up for long-term failure. So we really try and stay away from what we call practices called topping the tree. So I would want to look at the structure of the tree, and there may be some weight reduction you could do if it's done correctly to help reduce limb drop. There may be some supplemental things such as cables that might help depending on the situation. So, you know, something you need to have an arborist check out, but I would really not recommend topping out a tree like that.
Well, you know, in the past couple of years, we've been getting the trimmers in, you know, and what they normally do is they cut off the lower branches, so it just encourages the tree to grow taller and taller and taller.
But that's what trees do. I mean, that's...
I know, I'm trying to discourage them from doing that.
Well, I don't know if it encourages. I think the trees is going to do that anyway. But as you say, Pat, topping a tree that is cutting off the leader is not ever recommended. And why is that? And even though they do it, people do it because you've seen, I call it tree mutilation under the power lines. You know, we're going to look back at this era, if we survive, and with our power lines and the way we hacked at our trees and say, boy, these people were barbarians. First of all, why did you have these wires all over the place when we find a better way to transmit, you know, put electricity, send it back and forth? And the other is like, and then they hacked their trees. They planted them underneath and they hacked at them. But so it's, you're in a difficult situation there, Ron.
Okay.
Pat, any advice?
Well, get a good arborist in there and explain your concerns. And like I said, you may be able to do some canopy thinning or weight reduction with some of the branches over the house. But Mike's right. The tree wants to grow tall. And if you're going to fight Mother Nature, you're going to set yourself up for problems. So
I think that's a good way to go. Ron, thank you so much for the phone call. I appreciate it.
Okay, thank you.
773-763-9278. Let's go to Sue. You're on the Mike Novak Show. Good morning, Sue.
Oh, hi. Thank you, Mike, and hi to everyone there. My question is, to Dr. Bell is, have you integrated any of the work done by Dr. Doug Tallamy out of the University of Maryland about how trees support insect life? In his book, Bringing Nature Home, he has a list of the number of insects that are supported by different native species. And, for example, oak trees, the oak species support over 500 different types of moths and butterflies. Now, that's the research that he has done. Cherries and willows are enormously beneficial. And with the, you know, insects are just such an important part of our life. We have to have them, even though everybody thinks we don't. So that's my question to Dr. Bell. Have you integrated, and if you have not, then please do, because in Norway, maple provides absolutely no ecosystem services other than being there.
You know,
that's
Sue,
all I have to say.
No, Sue, hold on. Don't go away. I got some extra information on you. You're a Dundee Township supervisor?
Yes.
What kind of supervision?
I supervise the whole township, and Dundee Township is one of the five townships in the state that has an open space district, which I helped create by being an activist. So in 1997... the voters in our township voted an $18 million bond referendum to buy land to restore as open space. And that's what I'm doing now as a supervisor. We have 860 acres, and I'm restoring it in native vegetation, I and my staff and the many volunteers that I have. And we do a lot of looking at the botanical gardens and researching about you know, factoring in climate change and also creating habitat with native trees and native other plants.
And I got to thank you for your question, because that was a question I was going to. And see, all my listeners are so smart. They are anticipating what I'm going to ask, because, yeah, Doug Tallamy has been on this program, and he changed my life. Basically, by pointing out that one of the things we have to protect is our native insect population, that if we lose insect biomass, that's a chain reaction we don't want to start. And I guess that was part of my question earlier when I talked about native species. And unfortunately, I forgot this part of the equation, Sue, so I thank you for calling. And that is, if we're planting ginkgos and other non-natives, how are we supporting our insect populations in the future? Yes. So I'm going to let you go, Sue, and have Dr. Bell try to answer that. Thank you for calling.
Okay, thank you.
Bye-bye. What do you think?
Well, I think that the question I heard was, did we integrate any of the work?
Well, that it was part of the question.
Right, and no, this was just to look at the effects of climate change on urban street trees.
But doesn't it occur to you that you need to integrate that work too? I mean, we can't, and that goes back to the comment that was made earlier about planting natives, right, as well.
Yes, I think it would be a great thing moving forward. I mean, once you finish research, you always see, where can we go from here, and that certainly would be a great, you know, path to take, I think, from this point. But this was, as I mentioned before, kind of the first of one of its kind studies, and so we just want to look at the effects of climate change.
And that is always a problem with being a first of its kind study. Lots of questions get asked,
right?
Because of that,
you create
study.
More questions than
right.
you answer.
And I'm not busting you here and saying, well, why don't you know this? I think it's good that we bring this up, and we know that it's going to lead to other questions. Mm-hmm. Before we get to our next caller, excuse me. Something I just thought about in terms of tree planting, Pat, and that is staking. That's kind of a controversial subject. It didn't used to be, but it kind of is now. And what is your opinion on that when you plant a tree? Some people, I think in the old days, everybody assumed you always staked a tree. And now some arborists and scientists are saying, no, that might not be such a good idea because it doesn't allow a tree to have its own strength. What's your position at the Care of Trees?
If it's done right, when it's first put in, then staking can be a very valuable tool for helping to get the tree started. You want to keep it loose enough that the tree can move around and, like you're saying, begin to develop taper that it's going to need to kind of stand on its own feet down the road. But if you've got to really anchor that tree in and are planning to leave it there for a long time, you're going to create a tall, skinny, weak tree. So I think initially when the tree's going in, or especially if it's a large tree that had a lot of its roots taken off when it was transplanted.
Well, they all do, don't they, pretty much? I mean, that can be really damaging to a tree to dig it up and then move it someplace else.
Sure.
Studies show that 90% of the roots could be removed.
Mm-hmm. Right. And that's why they don't always grow very quickly right after you plant them, mm-hmm. is they're working on getting their roots back under them if everything's going right.
All right, let's take one more quick phone call, and that's Debbie. You're on the Mike Novak Show. Good morning.
Good morning, Mike. I love your show.
Thank you.
I'm calling this morning about the impact that chemical spraying from above has on trees, because our whole line of homes have crabapple trees planted in front. All of them are bare in the top, and in mid-August, they actually look like we were mid-fall. They're losing leaves. It's been very dry, true. But I've noticed more trees are falling over, and we are being sprayed every day with chemicals like aluminum and barium, and it's just taken a toll on everything across the whole ecology.
Are you, I'm wondering, we don't have a lot of time, Debbie, but let me just ask you, are you talking about chemtrails?
Exactly.
Okay. Chemtrails, as you know, is very controversial. Some mm-hmm. some people believe there's a conspiracy and that the government is poisoning us on purpose, and other people just don't think that's true. I'm in the latter camp. I think that chemtrails are I don't think the government has time to be that crazy.
I'm not saying it's the government.
Yeah.
I'm just saying that they do exist, and they are having an effect on our ecology. And for us to deny or ignore that is to bury our heads in the sand about what's really going on. And you believe in stopping the fracking,
Yep.
This is another dot that has to be connected to the, you know, I've heard that Monsanto is developing trees that are spray resistant. And I'm wondering if they're beginning to be brought in and planted. It's just like the GMOs.
Okay, well, we'll have to leave it at that because I got about 30 seconds. So what I would suggest, it seems to me that the crabs are actually suffering from drought. Would you agree with that, Pat?
It could be drought, could be apple leaf scab, could be a few things without looking at them.
Yeah. So those things might be part of the deal, and they, you know, I'm just not a fan of that conspiracy theory. Gentlemen, thank you so much for being here today. Dr. Andrew Bell from Chicago Botanic Garden, Pat Etherington from the Care of Trees, a Davey company, by the way. Davey, you can call him 800-508-9466. Or go to thecareoftrees.com. We're out of here. At this point, I say go green or
go home.